If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is The Stage Right Side with James Whiteside, where we'll dive deep into the dark world of dance and come up on the bright side. Welcome to The Stage Right Side. Michael Breeden, how you doing?
Good. This is not my usual positioning in this situation.
So. Why? Tell me why. Tell my audience why. They're dying to know.
Well, I have been hosting my own podcast for 7 years now.
And what is it called?
It's called Conversations on Dance. You have been on as a guest
at 17 times. Like 17,
a minimum of 17 times. So, yeah, I'm not usually in this position, but I think I actually prefer it over here.
To be the interviewee.
Yeah.
Well, we are in Colorado, in Vail, Colorado, for the dance festival here, also known as the Vail Dance. What is it called? The Vail Dance Festival?
Well, it used to be called
the Vail International Dance Festival.
Or was it Internet? Yeah, no, that's what it was.
And now it's just the Vail Dance Festival.
It's just Vail Dance Festival.
Yeah.
We axed some of the
foreigners. That ain't right. Well, that, you know, the American West. Oh, God. Okay, so...
off to a great start.
We're a week into this festival now, and I've never done this. I've never done an episode on tour, so this feels like the first in hopefully a string of many special episodes. I've only ever done this from the comfort and confines of my dressing room at the Met Opera, and then in COVID, I did it from my depressing apartment, but let's not speak of that.
Wait, how long have you been doing this for?
My first season was in 2016.
Uh-huh.
And by season, I mean, like, I do 6 episodes here, like, every 4 years.
Uh-huh. But you've had fun things. Didn't you have Alexei on?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and you asked him if he had ever done drag.
Yes. I have some iconic one-liners with Alexei.
Yeah.
But the sound quality in my podcast is so awful. We were just discussing
this. Well, this is fine now, right?
Before, it would be ideal if we had our own microphones.
Right.
So right now, the setup is, all of you fans of the Stage Right Side out there, I have one microphone to catch two voices, which is just not it. So if you go to the show notes, I would love it if you'd make a little donation so I can upgrade my equipment and the sound quality and make it all fierce. A fierce sleigh.
Wow.
Okay, Michael Breeden, you're here in Vail with me. You are here because... Michael's a retired dancer, but now is a stager of fabulous ballets by the likes of Alexei Romansky and Justin Peck, and he is here in the capacity of podcast host.
Podcast girly.
We out here. And tell me a little bit about the beginnings of conversations on dance?
Well, we started it because Rebecca, my co-host, Rebecca King-Ferraro, and I were both injured and a little bit bored. And she realized that at that point there were almost no dance podcasts because she was doing, you know, PT exercises and stuff. And she wanted to listen to something that would entertain her. And she was like, that's so strange. So there's a hole in this very niche market. Mm-hmm. So we should try to fill that. And I mean, originally we were just talking, the two of us, and those early episodes are so dark. They're
are they still up?
No, because we change platforms or something. Yeah. And so we could only take 300 episodes. We had 325 or 330.
Wow.
And so the 30 episodes just fell into the abyss.
Oh my gosh. So prolific, though.
Yeah.
So I used to be on a different podcasting platform as well. And then I was under an umbrella called like the Dance Network, something or podcast Dance Network.
Oh, yeah.
Kimberly Falker runs it. And it was fabulous. And she would host the episodes and everything. But then I had new management and they were like, we want you to start a new podcast that's like more serious. And I did that for a while. It was called Front Row and it was very like NPR adjacent, me being like, well, when did you know that you were going to be a cat? And they'd be like, meow.
And what are we into now?
What's our third incarnation? Is going back to the original format of just conversations on dance. It's just your podcast just, with a different name. Oh, God. And I don't have 300 episodes, thank God.
It is, I mean, well, you know, you must edit this yourself then.
Yes.
Yeah, so I don't have to do that. If I had to do that, I probably would not. There would not be.
Who does that for
Rebecca.
You? Oh, yeah, Rebecca the Queen.
I have never touched an episode. I've actually, in fact, never listened to an episode.
I know, I don't listen to mine either.
I mean, who could?
Yeah. What I do, just for you all out there, we're getting really nerdy on the podcast moment, but if somebody says something or I say something that they don't want included in the podcast, I do a clap, like a big clap right next to the microphone so that when I look back at the waveform of the podcast, I can see where the oopsie poopsie is.
Oh, that's smart.
And then I cut it out.
Oh, we have to tell Rebecca that.
It's good. Yeah. It's good. Because, you know, people often are like, oh my God, don't post that, you know? Uh-huh. And I'm like, okay, clap. And then cut it out after, and it's easy to find. Otherwise, I'd be combing through 45 minutes of chat,
right.
Which is nonsensical.
Wait, so people are often doing... Well, I feel like you're very disarming in that way. You could get people to say terrible things.
Oh, the way I can Barbara Walters people, like...
See, Rebecca and I, we just... In advance, we don't do that.
You're
but I can
very,
see.
Very diplomatic. And you don't really... that's not the point. I feel like yours is super educational.
Right.
And mine is a little bit more like dirty.
Fun.
Yeah, fun girly.
Fun girly.
Yeah, poopy diaper.
Yeah.
Like you could say things like that on my podcast.
We could say. There are a lot of things we could say that we've already been saying in mail that are just not appropriate.
Absolutely. Okay, just for the record also, Michael is one of my best friends. We have a group chat with two of our other besties, and it's called Sex in the City, but Worse. That's the name of our group chat, and it is one of the greatest joys of my day.
Mm-hmm.
All right, cool. Michael, tell me a little bit about your background in dance, your career as a dancer.
A question I ask every day to others, but don't think of for myself, typically.
Do you remember?
Hard to say. Swiss cheese brains.
Yes.
Let's see, I grew up in Kentucky and immediately, I liked ballet from basically since I can remember, like watching the Nutcracker on PBS, whether it was the Baryshnikov and Gelsey version or the Macaulay Culkin version. I just was very...
also known as Balanchines.
Also,
LOL.
But at that point, it was very important that Macaulay Culkin was involved.
Yes.
Well, also, I was like, he's kind of bad at this.
Yeah.
Like, I could definitely do this as well, at least, probably a lot better.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I had ambitions to be in the Nutcracker, and that was basically it. I didn't really know what ballet was, but then...
Alistair Macaulay Culkin.
Alistair Macaulay Culkin, that's what I was trying to do. So then I did get into the Nutcracker, and from then on I was super obsessed. Mm-hmm. Like, I would put on productions with my friends, which someone recently pointed out to me later. It was like, sort of like being a repetitor.
Mm-hmm.
Hold
on, I'm going to interrupt you.
What that
is. For the folks out there, define repetitor.
Repetitor is just a fancy French way of saying a stager. Someone who teaches a ballet from scratch. So I am ostensibly an expert for this ballet. You know, whatever I've been tasked with So far, I've staged for Justin Peck mostly, and then I most recently did a ballet for Alexei Romansky. So they have a ballet that gets licensed. Let's say ABT wants to do Justin Peck ballet number 3. And then Justin says, Michael, can you stage that? I have to know everyone's part, but also theoretically how it's supposed to be danced, how it's supposed to be presented, and also things like lighting and costumes and, you know, tempi and all, mm-hmm. like all that. I should know everything about the ballet.
Can we just talk about the plural of tempo being tempi? It cracks me up.
Because we know tempi.
Because we know a woman named Tempi. And she's great.
Yeah.
Shout out to Tempi.
Tempi, also a fabulous dancer.
Yes, excellent.
What's his last name?
Ostergren.
Ostergren. Mm-hmm. I was going to try that.
We used to dance with Tempi in Boston Ballet. So mm-hmm. Michael and I were in Boston Ballet when we were 18-year-old monsters.
In the 80s.
In 1908. we used to take a Conestoga to the studios every morning, mm-hmm. led by 2 to 3 horses. The oxen were unavailable.
I mean, in Boston, that's about what us. So
we had woolly mammoths.
I mean, we're very old.
I just had my 40th birthday here in Vail, actually. Happy birthday to And it was really fun. I had like 14 hours of rehearsal, and then there was a performance, and we had drinks after. It was really nice.
I think that cake was also intended for you, too, but you were not there.
Yeah, I wasn't even there for my cake. Oops. Because I was already at the bar. Cool, cool, cool. Okay, so, yes, we know you're a repetitor. Tell me about your career as a dancer.
So, I first joined Boston Ballet, where you were dancing already. I was in BB2 for 1 year.
That's the apprentice company.
And it was not an ideal fit for most anyone. you know, it was, I love Boston Ballet. I think it's such a fabulous company, but it was not for me. And, you know, I think Miko did me a solid by no longer retaining my services. And then I went to Miami City Ballet, which made much more sense, especially at that time, because I had trained at the School of American Ballet and wanted to dance Balanchine ballets. In Boston Ballet, I didn't dance any. And then the year that I came to Miami City Ballet, I danced like, you know, at least probably 6 to 8 or something.
And
you know?
That was under Edward Villela?
Yes, which I also think was a good fit because for me, I'm a short man and Edward is a short man. Uh-huh. And so he was used to seeing people outside of their box. You know?
There's, on this podcast, actually, there has been quite a bit of discourse regarding height. I had Jake Roxander on the podcast. And and we discussed, you know, heightism in ballet and casting. Tell me about your experience being, 5'2 or whatever. Yeah.
I am 5'2. No, I'm 5'8, and I've never lied about that.
Okay, congrats.
I've never just added the extra. You know, but people be doing that.
I know.
I don't know why.
It's very Grindr adjacent.
Yeah,
you know?
I don't lie on my Grindr either. Although Grindr doesn't update your age. Did you know that?
No.
You have to do that yourself, so maybe I'm lying.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, I might still be.
I just round up so I look amazing. I'm 60 on my Grindr.
Oh, I started telling people I'm 40. Just, you know, get it out of the way.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then they're like, wow, you look so great. And I'm like, well, I know. speaking of looking great, I'm in Colorado right now, so I'm wearing a cowboy hat. If you're listening to this podcast on the podcast apps or whatever, you can also watch it on YouTube, and you can see our 40-year-old wizened visages in cowboy hats on YouTube. So
where were we? What were we talking about? We were talking about Grindr before Grindr. Oh, heightism. Okay. Actually, you know, I didn't really experience a lot of it. I feel like Miami City Ballet was a very short company. And I think that Edward always had a soft spot for short people, having had to deal with that himself. And a lot of the repertoire that I liked dancing, things like a divertimento number 15 or something that had like a more elegant flair to it, I wasn't not considered. Like, typically, maybe, I don't know, I didn't listen to your podcast with Jake, sorry.
Me either.
But I imagine someone like Jake, who has these like amazing virtuoso skills, like the most amazing virtuoso skills, could get pigeonholed because it's like if you're small and capable in that way, people just want to see that show, the fireworks, you know, that you can pull off. But if you're little and can't do those things like me, it gets a little dicey. So, but I think that I was cast in things that I looked good in and felt natural for, and I didn't have to deal with that once I was in Miami City Ballet. Prior to that, Well, certainly, like at New York City Ballet, I had, or at School of American Ballet, I always wanted to be in New York City Ballet, and they always told me that Peter was very fond of me and was interested in taking me, and then happened to be that my roommate got taken ahead of me. Like a year that
who was your roommate?
Troy Schumacher, who I also work for. I'm just dragging Troy.
I know.
It's funny. Sometimes I think about this because it's like it was very painful in the in the moment.
Of course, I can't imagine that disappointment.
Especially someone that you like care about, you know, like
winning.
Yeah,
you just want them to
won.
Die.
Yeah. He won. Actually, you know, so the day the week. I'm putting him on blast a little bit.
This is what the stage right side's all about.
I love Troy, but. So we were roommates and we wanted to get into the company so badly. And Troy was just a real like go-getter. Like he was asking questions in class and went in the front and
the nose was brown.
Yes. And so we both had another year after that. So I wasn't even thinking it was on the radar of anyone. But then when Troy got in early like that, it did feel like, you know, a death knell. Like that's it. That's like a short boy and that's part. That opportunity is gone.
Role filled.
Yeah. And, but there was this thing called the Allegro, which is like a yearbook kind of thing that they give out at the workshop, but I had a nice photo in it. Mm-hmm. And Troy was like, at least you have a beautiful photo in the Allegro. I don't. And I picked up that Allegro and I chucked it at his head. It's funny now.
I hope it wasn't like yearbook weight.
No. It was paper.
It was like Berenstain Bears.
Yeah,
like,
it was not. I didn't hurt him.
Okay. Oh, wow. The violence. I've never seen this violence in you.
That was just a brief moment. But
yeah, the rage exists.
Oh, I tore down all of my, like, I used to have this, like, you have bulletin boards in the dorms, and I had all these photos up, and I, like, ripped them off the wall.
You had a mad scene.
Yeah, I really was unwell as a teenager.
Yeah.
It's hard as a teenager.
Yes, especially at the School of American Ballet.
Yeah, I don't know if it was the school's fault. I loved my experience there, but then maybe we just, as students, we needed to be reined in a little bit more.
Okay, hear me out, and I could be completely off base, but I think over the decades, a culture of, let's say, drama has been cultivated in the hallowed halls of
the School of American Ballet.
Yes, which tends to trickle into the company dynamic as well.
Oh, sure.
And you know, like, you know when you have a brother or a sister and they're, like, really cuckoo?
Both. Yeah.
And you're like, I'm going to be normal just to not be them.
Uh-huh.
I feel like ABT is trying to be that in relationship to New York City Ballet. Mm-hmm. And I could be really, foot and mouth syndrome. But I've heard wild tales.
Well, they know they're cuckoo. Like, that's...
It's theatrical.
Yeah.
And we're the ones that have theater in the name.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh!
Yeah, I mean, you grow up doing those tutors, and maybe, you know...
I didn't grow up doing them. I joined late, so now I'm like, can I do this?
Are you cast in this?
I have done. Oh, yes. Slight. Yeah, okay. I've done a couple. I don't know that
well,
I was
Lilac
good.
Lilac Garden is my favorite.
Haven't done that one.
Oh,
that
so
one is
good.
Very, very gorgeous.
Very,
I'm a fan of tutors' work.
Yeah, it's good.
Okay, I'm going to stop dragging the company dynamics.
No, it's not even drag. It's just, I'm just reflecting and thinking and wondering. Like, it's not like Peter. I think it came from him because there was an attitude of, like, exceptionalism. Mm-hmm. Like, he wanted people to feel, like, to know, like, oh, we are the best. Mm. And New York City Ballet is the best. And kind of everything else is inferior. And so even if that's not told to us explicitly, it is implicit. Mm-hmm. And so that's why, you know, not getting into the company is so devastating, because you're just like, there is nothing else. Like,
you've been drinking that Kool-Aid.
Oof, yeah.
But then again, at
Full
the same
Jones
time,
town.
I was drinking the Kool-Aid, not even being involved in like ABT school or anything. Mm-hmm. Like as a child for me, ABT was that pinnacle.
Yeah.
Like, and City Ballet wasn't really even on my radar, which is wild.
Yeah, I had a weird, weird way of getting there, because I wanted to be at ABT, but maybe SAB. Well, SAB had dorms. ABT did not. I mean, do they have that now?
No, no. Well,
like,
they
for the
have,
summer,
like,
what do they do?
For the summer, I think you just have to, like...
Figure it out.
Like, I don't know. I feel like that's got to be socioeconomically problematic.
Yes, yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what the situation is. So don't quote me on that. I will find out and probably forget about it.
That was the situation in 1908
yes.
when we were attending summer programs. It sure was. So that is, I think, that was a deterrent for my family. I think, I don't even know what we were, what, when I was considering ABT, what we were thinking of doing. And then I was like, okay, I'll go to SAV. And then it was really jarring at first because they're like, turn from the long fourth mm-hmm. and do all these things.
So that, for, I mean, you probably already know this, all you lovely people out there, but the technique at... the School of American Ballet is based on Balanchine's teachings. And George Balanchine is, like, oddly enough, like, the daddy of American ballet. You know, he's
Even
Russian.
Though he's Georgian.
Yeah, Georgian. Yeah. Okay,
well,
what
I mean,
do I know?
It is, well, I mean, since that was in the Russian
yes.
Empire.
Yes.
But he proudly identified as Georgian. Not, like, from Atlanta, but, like,
across
the way.
Fun. Have you ever been to Atlanta?
Atlanta.
Oh, my God. So much fun.
Increases there. Oh, yeah, you did some. Yeah, because we talked about, yeah.
This is so random, but Gemma Bond, choreographer and former ABT dancer, she asked me to design costumes for her Atlanta Ballet mm-hmm. commission. And so I went down and put on, like, the most pretend hat ever and being like, I know how to do this. And I just, like, drew pictures and, like, watched people.
Uh-huh.
And I had a great time in Atlanta. And I had some friends that lived there at the time, so they took me out on the town. It was just like,
it's very
it was just
fun.
Really fun.
I would like to go for Pride. I think it would be fun.
Oh, totally.
We should, maybe we do that.
Okay, because we have so much time, LOL.
We do. I mean, I do have time this year, finally.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm doing with my life.
It'll fill up.
It will.
It'll fill
yeah.
up. It always does. So speaking of what you're doing and your schedule, mm-hmm. explain to me the life of a stager or a pediter.
Mm-hmm. Well, last year... I was gone for 35 weeks out of the year.
That's more
which is
work weeks than ABT
than,
has.
okay, well. really? Yeah, okay.
I think so. Or no, I think we have 36.
Yeah, that's. Yeah. I feel like that's
pretty
standard.
But then they tack weeks on mm-hmm. for tours and things, so like, you know, just everybody relax.
Yeah. No, I mean, that was pretty strange.
And I'm very happy with the schedule because then I get to go to places like Vail and
right.
do my thing. I just feel for, like, younger dancers who don't get gigs and stuff.
Right. I mean, I always think about that in Europe. Like, how many weeks off do they actually get? Like, maybe
oh
four
my
or
God,
five?
They're so
Wouldn't
exhausted.
You wanna, oof,
they don't even
too many
know what
weeks.
It, but then again, Europe is a vacation.
Yeah. Yeah. It, they really do be,
They're
like
snoozing.
That.
They're hanging out.
Yeah. If you're sick, if, like... Any
yeah.
indication of, like...
There's a wedding, you go to it.
Yeah.
I've missed every family wedding. Like, all of my siblings.
Mm.
The only wedding I went to was when I was, like, 12. And it was my, like, oldest brother's.
I went to my sister's wedding in 2009. But the rehearsal director, principal rehearsal director, was mad at me for, like, months
yeah.
after. And
this
it was,
is so real. This, yeah. We are so real for this. Because it ain't rat. It ain't Christian.
Yeah. I mean, it was so silly because it was Don Q, which mm-hmm. was, I think it was our second or third time mounting this particular production.
Mm-hmm. Your snaps and claps were missed.
I mean, I was sort of like lead Segadia.
Mm-hmm.
So I was
Segadia is like the first act Spicy Fisherman Core Dance.
Spicy Fisherman Core Dance, yeah. And we had, but I don't know, for some reason I was doing a lot of mime. Like they kind of condensed... So, into, like, you know, just fierce lead peasant.
Yes.
But so I was just, like, just leave this. Like, I didn't have an alternate, of course. And so I was just, like, it's just one day and you leave the spot open mm-hmm. and no one dies, you know. But she was pretty,
yeah.
she was spicy about that choice.
She wanted to be the lead peasant.
she did not. I mean, I love her. It's complicated.
I know.
I really love her. But, yeah, we had some tough times. What were we talking about before this?
Tell
really
me about your experience
you
teaching The Fairy's Kiss,
oh,
which
sure.
is a Ratmansky one-act full-length.
Mm-hmm. So in my 35 weeks away from New York, last year, eight of them, or maybe it was seven, were in Amsterdam at the Dutch National Ballet. And this was my first time getting to stage for Alexei, who I, like, worship. You know, to me, he is the Balanchine of the 21st century. And
j'agree.
I've never felt more inspired as... dancer, having someone in the front of the room like that, like, you just, every ounce of him emanates, like, genius and care and intelligence, and he's just, like, the most deeply wonderful artist I think that we have. So when he DM'd me to ask me to do this ballet.
Wow.
Which was really wild. And it happened as I was reading his biography.
Oh, like, yeah.
I'm reading his biography, the Marina Harris bio.
Yes.
Which is great.
My Boy from Kyiv. Get it on all book platforms.
Preferably not Amazon, maybe.
Okay,
if you
whatever.
Support them,
I don't know. I have a Kindle.
It's cheaper.
Yeah. I love my Kindle. Don't at me.
Yeah. Well, so he DMs me, and it's like as I'm reading the book, and I see like my phone like lights up, and it says like Alexei Romansky has messaged you, and I'm like, oh, that's weird.
Yeah.
And
am I getting spammed?
I was like, I thought he was gonna ask me to like host an event for him, like podcast girly. And then he said, would you like to stage Fairy's Kiss? Are you available? And what's funny is that I had written to him in 2018 to ask if I could stage Fairy's Kiss.
Oh, wow.
Because I had only ever done two stagings at that point for Justin. And I was in my, like, trying to make myself ask for things era because it's very difficult for us as dancers to do that, to
and
take
initiative.
And you had
retired, like, semi-recently from performing, which is a really terrifying time for a dancer. And I want to talk about that after we talk about staging. Just pin in that.
So I was trying to be, you know, assertive in some ways and
dom.
Ask for, yeah, I'm trying to be dom daddy, dom daddy Michael, asking for work. And I wrote it to him on Facebook where we are friends, we're friends, still are, but he never read it. Mm. And then as he's trying to contact me to ask me to stage the ballet, the first thing he does is sees this years old message asking to do it.
Uh-huh.
So I think Alexei is definitely someone who believes in fate. So it felt like a nice way to start. But then after, he is a very busy man. And, you know, famously...
ghosts. Like, no one leaves a person on scene more than Alexei Romansky.
Yeah, I was left on read.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I just figured, you know, well, if he's going to trust me, I have to trust myself and just do... Not. I always get kind of psychotically obsessed with whatever ballet I'm doing.
Yeah.
But I spent hundreds of hours for this because it's by far the most complicated thing I've ever done.
Mm.
45-minute ballet, 36 dancers, Stravinsky score. It's a story ballet, the first time I've ever staged a story ballet. So, yeah, I'm just doing hundreds of hours of prep work, hoping that when I get there, I know what the hell I'm doing.
Yeah, what did your roommate say? Scotty? Scotty's one of the Sex and the City, but worst
gals.
He's
just like, are you still doing Fairy's Kiss? And then he would, like, try to sing the Stravinsky music. And then he tried to add lyrics to it, but he couldn't come up with anything clever. So just, like, this very, like, abrasive Stravinsky music, and then Scotty goes, Fairy's Kiss, Fairy's Kiss.
Very Scotty-coded.
Yeah. Yeah, he came to support me, which was nice.
Yes.
But yeah, so I mean, and then I got there and people are like, how are you doing this by yourself? And I was like, I don't know.
Because I have to.
That's the job. Because God asked me to do it.
The baby Jesus said, goo goo gaga, do it.
Yeah, I'm not going to question him. But it didn't even strike me until I was there that some choreographers
have a team for
A team. And so something like this might typically include at least two people. I've done stages with two people.
Wolfworks had Antoine Varikin.
World's best stager, Antoine.
And Amanda Isles.
Oh, Amanda's amazing.
Yeah, she did Act 1 and 3, which are the ones that I did. Uh-huh. I worked with her primarily. And, oh my gosh, she's lovely. I never worked with her, though, so I'm blanking on her name. I apologize deeply. And they staged the crap out of that ballet. They nailed it.
Well, Amanda is a choreologist.
Yes.
And that is a really crazy thing that I can't comprehend but have the utmost respect for.
She's a specialist in Benesh notation, I believe, which is a form of... Okay, hear me out, folks. This is Cuckoo Boots. You know how music is written in, I don't know, music form? Got to me not knowing anything. Well, one can do this, too, with dance steps. And it is a very complicated, I don't know, you just really have to know what the hell you're doing. Otherwise, it looks like
hieroglyphs,
ancient Sumerian.
Yeah.
But it's really impressive. And so Wolfworks is notated by Amanda Isles. And, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Amanda, she worked with us in Miami City Ballet on a Carmen we did. And she just was very good at her job.
Yeah.
Very, very good at her job. And Antoine, I love Antoine. Antoine was staging a McGregor work while I was doing You're the Rabbit in Hong Kong. So
cool.
But yeah,
do you want to hear a little story about about Wolfworks specifically. Mm-hmm. So I had, I was going to be a different part in Wolfworks that I first was cast as.
What was
as.
Your other part?
I was going to be like Uncle Richard or whatever. What's his name?
Wait, who's Uncle Richard? Is it?
It's the like, the husband, the nice husband uh-huh. of Clarissa.
Oh, okay.
Richard.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, Richard.
I added uncle.
Yeah, but...
So I was cast as Richard, and so I did a couple of days of rehearsal as Richard, and I was supposed to be in Act 2 as, mm-hmm. like, one of the girlies.
Mm-hmm.
The Orlando act. Mm-hmm. And a couple of days in, they had Ermon scheduled to dance with Alexandra Ferry, mm-hmm. icon, legend, yeah, yeah. star, mm-hmm. Both of them. And... but Alex wasn't going to join us until Met season. We had this whole tour to Costa Mesa where we were going to tech and perform the ballet for 2 weeks. Uh-huh. And they had Ermon with Devin. And Devin's a tall woman, and yeah. Ermon is a shorter man.
Yeah.
And this just made no sense. So they were like, okay, we're going to take you out of Uncle Richard, and mm-hmm. we're going to put you down as Peter.
Uh-huh.
So then I did not get to work with Antoine, and it's killing me that I can't remember her name. Mm-hmm. But I worked with Amanda, and she was so lovely, but she would crack me up. She would be like, she kept telling me that I was not, like, the type of dancer that should be doing Peter. She'd be like, you're just, like, too energetic, like, you need to be, like, cooler. Like, every rehearsal, she'd just be like, okay, it's good, but, like, you're just doing it completely wrong.
Uh-huh.
And, it became a joke between Devin and I, because, uh-huh. like, Devin would just be, like, perfect, flawless icon, uh-huh. and then Amanda would just, like, pull me over and be like, you know, it's just not Peter. It's just not Peter.
It's just very English.
It was so funny. So we have a chuckle about that. And then in the end, she was super happy with how it all went. But okay.
She's great.
So tell me about your experience with Het National, also known as Dutch National.
They were incredible. You know, this sort of acting is just very deep in their roots. It all made sense to them. Especially there's a dancer, I don't know, I'm not going to try to pronounce her last name, but we call her Anna T because there are multiple Annas.
Hmm.
And it's just like when you teach her the mime, it's so wild to watch her communicate wordlessly and then, but immediately take chances. And, you know, it's so fun to watch. That's so opposite of any tradition that I am from.
Hmm.
So it's really exciting to watch someone just take like a fish in water, you know, to that sort of thing.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Medical Mutual wants to remind you it's almost time for Medicare's annual enrollment period. As a trusted health insurer for more than 90 years, Medical Mutual is here to help you find better Medicare benefits. Be confident you're getting the most from your Medicare Advantage plan. Schedule your free Medicare plan review today at medmutual.com/review. Medical Mutual, Ohio's hometown Medicare insurer.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, we're going to move on to another topic here. I want to talk about retirement as a dancer because, you know, I'm certainly not getting any younger and it's something I think about. I'm not retiring anytime soon, so, like, don't get any ideas, folks.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I was youngish. I was 30.
Yeah.
That's pretty young.
That's young as hell, girl.
Yeah, that was, yeah. But I didn't feel conflicted about my choice because I was very injured and would have needed a lot of recovery time, which would have meant for my place in the company at that time, I think I would have, this is what happens to anyone. Even if you have I'm sure you felt pressure coming back from your injury that, well, maybe someone's going to take my place. Even someone like you has a very clear, established hold on.
Yeah, but we're all so insecure and think we're replaceable because guess what? We are.
Yeah. So for someone who was just a 30-year-old core girly, you know.
You were like, all right, enough.
It was very easy for things that I would have always, that I had always done. It was very easy to imagine that I would no longer do them. Yeah. And that just felt exhausting. Mm. And equally exhausting was the idea of going to a new company and trying to make it happen all over again.
Totally.
So I just said goodbye.
And tell me about the time after you said goodbye, before you found your legs in staging.
Very dark.
Go on.
Horrible.
Tell me about
it. Horrible. I think I was feeling gaslit by everyone around me because a lot of us decided to retire.
Hold on. We've got a siren.
Yeah. Okay. They're probably going to, there's probably a cat in a tree somewhere.
Yes, definitely a cat. So how were people gaslighting you?
Well, it wasn't actually that they were gaslighting me. I just felt like I had a very obvious, visceral, emotional response to no longer dancing, and other people seemed very fine.
Yeah.
And I couldn't understand why I was so unwell compared to everyone else, just being like, okay, now you turn the page and everything's fine. And it's because, yeah, I mean, it was like my whole, it is our whole identity, but I just, maybe I just wore it all on the surface a little bit more. Like, I remember someone, the first time someone asked me what I did, and I could have just said anything, and it doesn't matter, but I cried. Like, I was at the Rusty Knot, and I was like, I have to go to the bathroom and cry. Yeah. And it's just like, because you have such a sense of pride. Like, yes. You know, you love saying, I'm a ballet dancer, because
it's hot.
It's hot. Yeah. I mean, it just has.
Also, like, just for a little bit of background on Michael, ever since I met Michael when he was 18, he's been the biggest ballet nerd. Like, truly unashamed nerdiness.
Unhinged.
Like, I mean, I know nothing, Jon Snow, compared to Michael. And I am so happy to be taught constantly by the example of Michael about the passion and joys of ballet.
That's very sweet of you to say. But yeah, it was very unsure of how to move forward. Yeah. And then when I staged my first ballet, I realized that there is something I love as much as dancing. And since then, you know, have been able to really, like, I don't have, no part of me wishes I was dancing today. Yeah. Actually, that's psychotic to think of. I have less than zero interest in that. But yeah, I mean,
Hold please. I think Isabella is here. Hi, Sand. I think she's on the phone.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so Isabella has just returned from rehearsal, so I think we're going to wrap this up. But what are you reading right now before we?
Ooh, 1Q84.
Ah, Haruki Murakami, correct.
Yes.
I haven't read it.
It's very good so far. Mm-hmm. Although I can't read Japanese, so I.
Yeah.
My brother can. He lives in Japan.
Do you go to Japan to visit him?
I'm going to go to his wedding over Christmas. And I went to Japan just the first time last year.
Oh my gosh, isn't it magical?
It's really beautiful.
I'm like, can I move there? And the country's like, please don't. Literally.
Please stop. Yeah. Just go away.
They're like, nobody's allowed here unless you marry somebody, pretty much.
Yeah, he's marrying a Japanese woman, and he speaks fluent Japanese. Wow. And so he's like as immersed as they'll let you
be. Do you want to hear some of my Japanese? Okay. I actually learned
it. Should I send it to Alex to see if you're doing well?
Yes. Okay. I'm going to say, check, please. Okaike onegai shimasu.
That sounds great to me.
I'm going to say, nice to meet you. Hajimemashite. I'm going to say, do you understand? Wakarimasu.
Ooh.
That's a really good one, isn't it? I think that's right. I'm going to stop now.
Okay. Well, I was buying it.
Yeah. It's like, you know, it's fun. I like the way it sounds. It's like really staccato.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wish I could read it because I think that the book would be better in its original language, but it's still a great book.
I'm reading John Steinbeck's East of Eden. I think I talked about it last week or whatever, but it's so gorgeous, and I love the way Steinbeck reads society for filth. Mm-hmm. He has, like, really, like, the library is open moments.
Mm-hmm. What's the, I mean, Grapes of Wrath has, like,
I didn't read that.
Oh, okay, but it has a super famous opening. What is it again?
Oh.
But it's about, yeah.
Middle school. Me when I went to middle school.
Yeah.
All right, Michael Breeden. You can follow Michael on Instagram at
Michael Sean Breeden.
Michael Sean Breeden. And don't forget, You can watch this interview on YouTube or subsequent interviews or past interviews. Don't forget that you ought to be donating so that I can upgrade my equipment. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Until next time on The Stage Right Side. Bye. Make sure to follow me at James B. Whiteside on Instagram and TikTok. That's James B. Whiteside. And don't forget to click the link in my bio to purchase tickets for upcoming performances or to buy my book, Center Center, a funny, sexy, sad, almost memoir of a boy in ballet. Enjoy!
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Medical Mutual wants to remind you it's almost time for Medicare's annual enrollment period. As a trusted health insurer for more than 90 years, Medical Mutual is here to help you find better Medicare benefits. Be confident you're getting the most from your Medicare Advantage plan. Schedule your free Medicare plan review today at medmutual.com/review. Medical Mutual, Ohio's hometown Medicare insurer.